that feeling of fear, of being out of control.
What? Oh, I didn't mean to look at you. Of being out of control.
Is something that many of us have probably felt over the past few weeks, and certainly this past week. As I talked with various folks this week, I finally had to just get rid of Facebook and not even look at it. There's so much flying back and forth. You know what I'm talking about. I don't even have to mention it. But I've talked to people who are shocked and astonished. I've talked to people who are in jubilation. I've talked to people who have been in tears, who are terrified, who are angry. I've talked to people who are extremely joyful, and people who feel an awful lot of dread. And these are just some of the reactions I've witnessed from fellow Christians following this past week's election. I said in church, sorry, election. Some people view the election as a direct answer to prayer, and other people feel it as a victory for bullies and racists. Some people regard it as a triumph for pro-lifers, and some people feel more secure after this election, and others are fearing for their very lives. It's quite a range out there, and I'm not standing up here today to pick a side. I'm standing up here today to encourage us as the church and to help highlight what our job is now as the church following this election. So we have this divided nation. We have all of these divisions in our society, and a lot of these divisions come from an inability from one side or the other to actually hear the concerns of the people on the other side. Most people that voted for their candidate voted out of a deep sense of conviction. It wasn't a flippant thing that they did when they voted the way that they did. Most Christians that voted out of a deep sense of conviction. But somehow, we've ended up not seeing the other side as fellow citizens. We've ended up seeing the other side as our enemies. Thomas Merton said, "Our job is to love others without stopping to inquire whether or not they are worthy." Kind of an interesting thought. We've all endured these scorched earth politics for months. Our nation is divided, and we need to be healed. There needs to be healing in our nation. A divided nation needs a united church. I know it seems like, well, what can Brownsville do? We're talking about the nation, and here we are in West Windsor. But the nation is made up of little West Windsors, little Weathersfields, little Reddings, and we have a voice right here. The church needs to be a place of civility, a place where conversations on all of these things that have divided this nation can occur in the light of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Last Sunday, I don't know if you remember what the gospel lesson was. Anybody remember? No, I don't think so. Okay, just checking. Yeah, at least you're honest. That's good. I can't lie in church. It was the lesson on the Beatitudes. All the blessed are those who. And this gospel lesson kind of picks up off where that one left off. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hid. Nor do men light a lamp and put it under a bushel, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. So let your light shine before people, that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven. So the rest of this gospel talks about how Jesus says, "I say to you, heaven and earth shall pass away, but not one iota, not a dot will pass from the law till all is accomplished." And this whole gospel can kind of be summed up into two statements. One, your life is to be an example of Jesus Christ to the world around you. Forget Democrats and Republicans, forget Trump and Clinton and all that stuff. We're shining the light of Jesus Christ. Our example, our life is to be an example to the world of Jesus Christ around us. And two, the other thing this gospel lesson says for us today is that we don't get to change the rules in order to make following Jesus easier. Sorry. Bummer. That would be nice. But that, those two things kind of boil down into one statement. And this is the biggest charge that I hear that folks who are not following Christ have against Christians. I've been called this a number of times, and in some respects it's true, that we can't be a hypocrite. We can't be hypocritical in the way that we approach life. If we're going to call ourselves Christians, we actually have to follow Christ. I know it sounds really mundane to say, but if we're actually going to follow Christ, we have to do it on His terms, not ours. If we follow Him, but we decide that some of His teachings we don't really like, we don't agree with that, that makes me uncomfortable, so I'm not going to do that thing, even though Jesus said it. But I like this thing that Jesus said, I'm going to do that. That's kind of tough to do that. That lets us kind of cherry pick and pick and choose what we're going to do and what we're going to believe. You know, if we say that we follow Christ, but we decide to ignore the plight of the poor, we've become hypocrites. So the law of Christ, to love God and neighbor, is not at our disposal to interpret as we wish. You know, I'll love all my friends that think like me, but these other people, you know, they're not my fellow citizens. They're really more my enemies. I'm not really going to love them. That's God's job. He can love them. It's not. We are the light of the world. We are what the world sees when they are looking for Christ. So we've got this hypocrisy functioning in our lives to some extent. And the way the world sees the church is that the church is hypocritical. And to see the damage that's done by hypocrisy, we only have to look at our country's condition today. The political party that prides itself on being progressive and open-minded policies has been accused of rigging its own primary to ensure that the right candidate got put out there. Unless you think I'm just hammering on the Democrats, the party that prides itself on standing on traditional American values went ahead and nominated a candidate that arguably doesn't necessarily represent a lot of those values based on his alleged conduct. So there's a lot of hypocrisy out there. And I'm not picking sides, I'm just trying to point out that nobody's righteous. Everybody has challenges. And so the church is the same way. We have challenges that we need to address in our own lives and in our own functioning as a church. This has been the ugliest election season I think I've seen. And there's a lot of mopping up to do. And there's a lot of public scrutiny on both sides. And as Christians, we face the same public scrutiny and the same condemnation from the world on a regular basis. Here, let me give you an example. Think of a televangelist. Okay? Send me your money. I need another jet so I can fly across the world to get to some other place to do my thing. Or if you send me money, God will answer your prayers. I've heard that from some televangelists. And that's some of the hypocrisy that the world points at with the church. They see people that sweet-talk people into donating money so they can live it up fancy with all of the things that they think they need and want. So rather than living in denial, I want to challenge us to look at ourselves individually, because really the only thing we can change is ourself. Anybody been in a Facebook fight this week? Well, you can raise your hand in your heart. Was anything accomplished by it? Did you change the other person's mind? Probably not. All we can do is allow Christ to be at work in our hearts and our minds through His Word, and that's where change will occur. That's where healing will begin. So Jesus said that the church is the light of the world. We aren't one of the lights in the world. We are it. Look around at each other. This is the light of the world. You are the light in this area. The world needs the church. You know, throughout history, the church has shown its light in some of the darkest times and the darkest places. The church has been through a lot, and it's still here. It feels like the world keeps getting worse. You might agree with me on that, I don't know. But be encouraged that the darker the night, the brighter the light shines, like I mentioned to the kids. Notice it in here on Christmas Eve when all the lights are down and there's just a few candles lit, how much light those candles throw. So look at our lifestyle, look at your lifestyle, and think, does my lifestyle reflect the holiness of God? Does my lifestyle reflect the presence and the work of Jesus Christ in me? Do people look at you and say, that person's God is worth checking out? They are living their life differently, and I want to understand why. Our lives should be so different from the lives of folks in the world that people just drop their jaw and go, what? That makes no sense. Tell me more about why you're doing that. So each day, we need to wake up and remind ourselves, I am the light. I will shine today. In John chapter 4, Jesus said, behold, I say to you, lift up your eyes and look on the fields. They are ripe for harvest. Look at the harvest that's around you in your own circle of friends, around your neighbors. Engage people and try to go deeper with them. Invite them to church. Ask them what they believe about spiritual things. Offer to pray for them when they are hurting. You know, the stat in Vermont is not very good. 2% of people would claim to be followers of Christ. New Hampshire has this beat at 3%. And Maine is like 5%, okay? But even though it's only 2% in Vermont, 85% of people say that they are spiritual and believe in spiritual things, which means that there's an awful lot of people out there searching for the light that you have to shine. So don't hide it under a bushel. Let it out. Let your light so shine before people. So the church needs to be a listening and a praying church in the face of a divided nation. We need a church that hears and that prays for the needs of its members and the needs of its community, and not just the majority or those that feel that they've won. We need a church that sees prayer as a vocation and actively prays for our nation and prays for the world. We need a church that welcomes people to come together to the foot of the cross, not to become like the people with whom we disagree, but together to become more like Jesus Christ. So one final thought. To the extent that we may have imbibed this political anger that's in the nation, we need to repent and ask God to form us into the body of his Son. Jesus isn't Democratic or Republican. He's God, and we are called to follow him. So the church is God's plan A in the world. We are the light of the world. There is no plan B. We are the light of the world. So let's shine. In the name of Christ. Amen.